Chapter 22. Ravensburg. Eric smiled. Kitty seemed to fly into his arms, barely giving him time to dismount.
"I was so scared I'd never see you again," she said.
He kissed her and hugged her tight. "Me too." Soldiers milled about the stable yard of the Inn of the Pintail, and Nathan and Frieda approached. Frieda hugged her son, then Nathan shook his hand.
"Congratulations," said Nathan with a grin. "Made a knight captain and married."
Frieda said,
"Why didn't you send word? When this girl first came to me, I thought her mad, married to my boy."
She fixed Kitty with a dubious look. "But after a while she told me enough to convince me she knew you quite well." Then she smiled. Eric blushed.
"Well, things were pretty confused, and we had to act quickly."
"So she tells me," said Frieda.
Nathan said,
"You look all in. Come inside and have a bath and some food."
Eric said,
"I will, but first I have to start getting people out of town. You're all going to have to be on the march by the day after tomorrow."
"Leave?"
asked Nathan. Eric nodded.
"The enemy's no more than 5 days behind, perhaps as close as three, and some of his cavalry units may be closer. We'll defend the town for as long as we can after you leave."
"Then?"
asked Nathan. Eric looked down, almost ashamed to answer.
"We'll have to burn it to the ground."
Nathan went pale.
"Do you know what you're doing?"
Eric said,
"I know. I've already put Wilhelmsburg, Wolfsburg, and a half-dozen villages to the torch."
Nathan ran a hand over his leathery old face. "I never thought I'd see it again." Eric remembered he had lived through the sacking of the far coast years before.
"I can only tell you it's absolutely necessary."
A very tired-looking figure in a grey robe rode awkwardly into the courtyard and pulled up next to Eric's horse. Robert Delise got off his horse, his trembling left knee barely able to support his weight as he dismounted. He looked almost bow-legged as he turned to Eric.
"Do you ever get used to this?"
Eric smiled.
"Mother, Nathan, this is Robert, and he's just learning how to ride."
Nathan winced in sympathy.
"Come inside. I'll pour you some wine to ease your discomfort."
Nathan signalled to Gunther, his apprentice, to take the magician's horse. The boy ran over, smiled at Eric, and looked questioningly at the former smith's mount.
Eric said, "I'll be needing her for a while. I'll be back later, and then you can tend her for me."
To Nathan he said,
"I'll be billeting men here and in every other inn in the town, the growers and vintners all, and any other place I can find. So expect a fair amount of shoeing and tack repair between now and when you leave. You're the only man in Ravensburg, besides our company smith, who can repair weapons and armour."
He looked regretful as he said,
"Don't expect much sleep for a few days."
Nathan shook his head and said,
"Come with me, Robert, and I'll join you in a glass. I think I'm going to need it."
Kitty kissed Eric.
"Hurry back."
Frieda kissed him as well and whispered,
"She seems a fine girl, Eric, if a little odd at times."
Eric grinned.
"You don't know the half of it. I'll be back for supper."
As his mother turned away, he said,
"Any word of Rue?"
She stopped.
"Two of his wagons got here a couple of days ago. I think they're over at Gaston's. But we haven't heard anything of him."
"Why?"
"He was on the road, and it's been difficult."
Frieda, who never had any use for Rupert, but knew how close her son was to him, nodded and said,
"I'll say a prayer."
Eric smiled.
"Thank you, Mother."
He remounted and headed back out into the town of Ravensburg to oversee the deployment of the men and get ready for the destruction of the town in which he had lived most of his life. Rue said, "How are you doing?" Louis said, "Better." He was riding beside Rue, and indeed looking better. From ahead, Jadow turned and said to Rue,
"Man, considering that you almost killed him with that poultice, he looks positively reborn."
"Well, I thought that was the moss Nakor had showed us." The elves had removed Rue's concoction, found the correct ingredients for a healing poultice, and had redressed Louis's wound. Jadow's soldiers had secured enough mounts from the raiders they had killed, so Rue, Louis, and the women could ride. The elves were all on foot, so two of them led the horses with the children, while Carly and Helen kept a close eye on their offspring. They had moved from the scene of combat and made camp. Jadow dispensed with the full entrenchment, since the elves made excellent outer sentries, and Jadow decided the extra 2 hours a day of movement was more necessary than defensive security. Twice since leaving that camp in the morning, they had reports of other companies moving south. Kingdom forces to the east and invaders to the west. It was clear that they were heading straight toward the next battle. Rue knew enough about the surrounding countryside to understand that after Ravensburg, the only town of size was Wolverton, and the countryside around that hamlet was not conducive to a stout defence. They would hold for a while at Ravensburg, then fall back to Darkmoor.
"How far to Ravensburg?"
Jadow asked Rue. Rue said, "We'll be there in less than an hour."
"Good," said Louis. "I could use a taste of that wine you and Eric used to brag on so often."
"You'll not be disappointed," said Rue.
Then he thought of a large portion of the kingdom army already being in Ravensburg, and said, "Assuming there's any left when we get there." 10 minutes later, they approached the first kingdom camp, located behind a very defensible rise in the road. They hailed the guards and were passed without question. As they rode along, they saw more and more elements of the kingdom army digging in. Rue said, "Looks like they're fighting along 10 miles or so up front." Jadow pointed over his shoulder to the north.
"We've been turning them this way for weeks. We left behind enough men to ensure they don't try to feint this way, turn back and break through north of us."
Rue knew the local terrain as well as anyone.
"Even if they get past you that way," he said, "they're still going to have to turn south when they try to climb Nightmare Ridge."
"That's the plan," said Jadow.
The closer they came to the town of Ravensburg, the more frantic the activity. The road they travelled ran parallel to a low ridge line, a series of interconnecting hills that had been planted with grapevines for years. Soldiers were cutting the large grapevines, some as big as small trees, piling them, along with anything else they could find, to form breastworks along the top of the ridge. While no winemaker, Rue had spent enough time growing up among them to know what a loss those vines would be. Some were 300 years old, rootstock that would be impossible to replace. He noticed that workers were madly cutting vines, saving them for grafts, in the hope they could some day return to these vineyards and start over. Rue silently wished them luck. They reached Ravensburg in mid-afternoon. Rue saw Eric supervising the establishment of a barricade across the main road. He waved, and Eric rode over.
"Rue! Louis! Jadow!" said Eric, relief obvious on his face.
Galain waited until greetings were exchanged and said, "Captain von Darkmoor?"
"Yes," said Eric. "What can I do for you?"
Galain produced a scroll and handed it to him. Eric read it and said,
"Good."
He pointed toward an inn across the square.
"If you'd like to eat, go there and tell 'em I sent you."
"Thank you," said Ghislaine. Eric looked at Carly, Helen, and the children, and said, "If you'd be so kind as to continue leading those horses, I'd appreciate it." To Carly, he said, "Tell me Mother I sent you, and don't let her give the children too many sweets." Carly smiled, and a tear of relief ran down her cheeks, despite her attempts to restrain it.
"Thank you," she said.
As the two women and four children were led away, Eric said to Lewis, "What happened to your shoulder?" Lewis said, "Long story. I'll tell you tonight." Eric nodded. To Rue, he said, "Why don't you go with your family and we'll visit later? I still have a lot to do." "Apparently," said Rue. "Until later." They rode off, and Eric accepted Jadow's mocking salute. "Report, Sergeant."
"Yes, sir, Captain, sir," said Jadow with a grin.
"All right, that's enough.
Anything you say, Captain, sir."
Eric leaned over and said, "Would you like to be a corporal again, Sergeant?"
"Oh, don't tease me with promises you won't keep, you evil man."
Eric grinned. "What have you seen?"
"There's a tough bastard up to the north leading the enemy, named Duco. General Duco. He's staying put, pounding at that little pass between Egley and Tanneris. The Earl of Pemberton and the Duke of Yabon both have heavy infantry dug in there, with some courtesan archers holding the higher ridges, keeping the enemy down in the pass. They're tough little bastards and can pick your teeth with their arrows. So most of Duco's men are just hitting the barricades across the trail, over and over. It's a bloody mess, a regular grinder up there. But other than that, most of the enemy's forces are heading this way."
"Any word on Fadua?"
"None. Seems the Lord High Badman is staying close to the Emerald Bitch."
Jadow scratched his chin.
"This is a pretty messed up invasion, my friend, if you see what I mean."
"I see exactly what you mean," Eric said. "Go get some food, and when your men are in billets, take a night of rest. I want you and your company to pull back and see what you can do in the next town, Wolverton. The enemy should come right through it, so see if you can come up with some nasty surprises for 'em, so they might slow down a little." Jadow grinned.
"Nasty surprises are my speciality, Captain."
"When you're done, get back here. I need you to supervise the flying company on the northern flank." Eric saluted, and Jadow and his 60 men rode off. Eric returned his attention to the matter at hand, but part of his mind was preoccupied with his family, particularly with his young wife, who was only a 10-minute ride away. The inn was crowded, so Milo, the innkeeper, put Rue, Carly, Helen Jacoby, Eric, and Kitty in the kitchen, all of them packed in around the table used to prepare meals. The children had already been fed and sent off to bed. Even without them, things were so tight, Kitty sat upon Eric's knee, a condition neither seemed to mind much. Eric ate hungrily, his first hot meal in days, and his mother's cooking to boot. Milo had opened several bottles of his better wine and was pouring rounds. Robert DeLeese was bunking in with Gunter, Nathan's apprentice, and Milo was at a loss over where he was going to put everyone. Frida said, "The children can have our room for the night." Nathan said, "Marlowe's got 'em upstairs."
"Not Rue's children. I mean Eric and his wife."
Eric blushed, and Nathan laughed.
"He's hardly what I'd call a child, dear."
Frida said,
"He's my boy, and that's little more than a slip of a girl. Anyway, they need some privacy."
"Well," said Nathan, "I'm going to be at the forge all night anyway, so you're the one who's going to have to find another place to sleep."
"I'll just throw a quilt under this table and sleep here. I'll have to be up early, too, for we've got hungry mouths to feed again."
Eric knew that Nathan and his mother lived in a small building just outside the smithy, and while it had once been little better than a dirty shed, when Tyndall, Eric's first master, had lived there, Nathan and his mother had turned it into a tidy little bedroom. Milo said,
"Eric, do we have to leave?"
Eric nodded. "First light, day after tomorrow. A couple of days after that we'll be fighting a battle here. We have to hold them outside of town while the northern and southern flanks withdraw. Then they hold while we pull back. And if all goes according to plan, we break them at Darkmoor." Milo sighed. "This inn is all I have." Eric nodded. "I have some money. When this war's over, I'll help you rebuild." Milo didn't seem convinced, but he accepted that at face. Eric said, "How are Rosalind and the baby?" "Fine," said Milo, a pleased expression on his face. "She and Randolph had another, a boy they named after me."
"Congratulations," said Eric.
"I sent word to them you were back, though how they couldn't know with all these soldiers running around calling your name would be a mystery. I'm a bit surprised they're not here yet."
Eric said, "Well, Randolph and his family have the bakery to dismantle and move."
"That's true. Still, I expect they'll want to see you before they evacuate."
Eric said, "I need to talk to them."
Kitty kissed his cheek. "Talk to them tomorrow." Eric grinned and blushed again. "Very well," he said softly. Then, looking around the table, he said,
"Well, I've got to be up early tomorrow."
Everyone laughed. Eric's blush deepened, and he took Kitty's hand, and they left the kitchen. After they were gone, Nathan said,
"Roe, you've done well."
Roe blew out his cheeks in an exaggerated sign of relief and said,
"Now that I know I'm still alive, yes, I'd say I have."
The others laughed, and they began catching up with one another, letting the familiar surroundings lull them into a momentary illusion that trouble was far away. At dawn the next day, Roo sat on the wagon box, his wife at his side. In the bed of the wagon, Lewis rode with Helen and the children. Roo smiled as he asked,
"See you soon."
Eric nodded astride his horse.
"But not for a while, if you're smart. By the time I'm in Darkmoor, you should be halfway to Malik's Cross. Besides, don't you have some estates or something in the east to keep you busy?"
Roo shrugged. "I have enough to keep me afloat if we get through all this. But in a funny way, I hate to miss what's coming." Eric grinned.
"No, you don't."
Roo grinned back. "You're right. I'm taking the children to some place they can play and eat and get fat." Eric laughed.
"Then get out of here."
Roo had found that two of his wagons had made it to Ravensburg. He did as he promised and paid the two drivers a year's wages. He then let them go and turned one of the wagons over to Milo and Nathan, keeping the other one for himself. Eric rode to the second wagon. Milo and Nathan sat on the driver's seat, while Kitty, Frida, Rosalind, her husband Randolph, and their sons Gerd and Milo huddled in the back. Eric smiled at the older boy, who now clearly resembled his true father, Stefan von Darkmoor. The boy sat in his stepfather's arms, asking excited questions in his own two-year-old's dialect of the king's tongue, while his mother held the baby in her arms. Eric said to Nathan,
"When you get to Darkmoor, find Owen Greylock. He'll find you a safe place to stay."
Kitty stood up, and Eric moved his mount close enough to the wagon so that he could embrace her. They held each other without speaking, then Eric let her go. Nathan flicked the reins and the horses moved away, and Eric sat watching his life move from him. His mother, her husband, who was a rare and wonderful man, Milo, who had been the only thing remotely like a father in his boyhood, Rosalind, as much a sister to him as if his mother had given birth to her, and Gerd, his nephew, though only a few knew that fact. And, most amazingly, Kitty, a slender young girl who meant more to him than he would have imagined possible before he met her. Eric watched until the wagon disappeared into the frantic town. Other townspeople piled their belongings into wagons, onto carts, or into bundles they would carry on their backs, in preparation for abandoning their homes. Anything important to a family's livelihood was being carried away. Tools, seeds, cuttings from the most productive vines, books and scrolls, inventory. Randolph's family had managed to dismantle their bakery, salvaging every item of hardware. The iron doors to the stone ovens, the flat iron oven bottoms and cooking racks, and every other valuable item, leaving only the empty stone ovens and some wooden cooling racks behind. Some families had every belonging in their possession piled high atop whatever cart or wagon they owned, while others grabbed only valuables, abandoning years of accumulation, furniture, clothing, and other household goods, sacrificed in the name of speed. Some townspeople had already left, driving small herds of sheep, goats, or cattle, or carrying away chickens, ducks, and geese in wooden crates. Soldiers hurried by, moving to positions determined months before Eric arrived here. Eric put aside the feeling of personal loss that gripped him and turned his attention to the defense of his hometown. He considered everything Greylock had ordered him to do and thanked the gods that the general and Captain Kalis had been so thorough. He knew that soon the most desperate fighting since the fall of Krondor was about to resume. Everything Eric had read in Knight Marshal William's library had reinforced one thing overall. War was fluid, unpredictable, and those who were best prepared for any eventuality, able to seize opportunity, were the most likely to survive. And that was exactly how Eric thought of it these days. Survival. Not victory, but simply enduring longer than the enemy. Let them die first, was all he prayed for. And he knew that if any detail of preparation eluded him, it wouldn't be for lack of effort on his part. Eric turned his horse and rode off to oversee the first line of defense. Men dug furiously, building up the breastwork across the pass west of Ravensburg. Axes rang out in the afternoon as trees were felled. Eric wiped his brow and glanced at the hot sun. Thoughts of snow were difficult on a day like this. Yet he knew that in the mountains of his home province, winter could arrive as soon as a month from now. But his homegrown instincts told him this would probably be a late and light winter. The look of the plant life and the behavior of the wild animals communicated to him silently that 8 weeks or more would pass before anything like a serious snowfall would occur, and 3 months was possible. Eric remembered the 1 year, he had been no more than 6, when no snow to speak of fell through the entire winter, only a slushy sleet, and that passed quickly. Eric decided to stop worrying about the weather and concentrate his attention on things over which he had some control. 2 riders were heading his way, one from the south, the other from the west. The rider from the west reached him first and saluted. He wore the garb of the Krondorian garrison, bloodstained and filthy. He said, "Captain, we got jumped by a company of Saar. The green bastards cut us up before we could get organized." He glanced over his shoulder, as if expecting to see the enemy come riding into view any minute. "They seem to resent what the Lancers did to them, so they go looking for light cavalry and mounted infantry to punish. Anyway, I got loose. I figure they're going to regroup with the advance units and be here by sundown tomorrow, or dawn the day after. Eric said. Good. Go into town and get some food and rest. He glanced around. I don't think we're going to need any trailing scouts in the future, so report in the morning to my first sergeant, a loud bully named Harper. Eric smiled. He'll find you some work. As the first rider left, the second reined in opposite Eric and saluted. He wore the uniform of the Pathfinders. We're getting a bit more pressure than I anticipated, Captain. I don't know how much longer we can maintain an orderly withdrawal. Eric reviewed the troop disposition to the south. You should be facing moderate pressure. What's happening?
I don't know, sir, but the Earl of Landreth is in charge.
What happened to Duke Gregory? The Duke of the Southern Marches, a court governor of the Vale of Dreams, had been put in charge of the southern elements of the retreat, coordinating his efforts with Greylock's defence of the centre. He had ample resources, given that the garrisons withdrawn from Shamata and Landreth were under his command.
Dead, sir. We thought you knew. Messengers were dispatched last week.
Eric swore. They never reached General Greylock or myself. They had assumed the invaders would keep a significant portion of their army turned toward Kesh, in case the Empire sought to take advantage of the confusion to enlarge their domain. But from what this soldier just said, the southern wing of the defense was collapsing too quickly. Eric said, "Ride into town, get a fresh horse, and grab something to eat. I'm sending two companies of archers to give you some help in the withdrawal." Eric reviewed the maps he had memorized and said, "Suggest to the Earl he let the front to his south collapse, pulling the soldiers on that flank around him to his left as he withdraws. Then have them dig in at the town of Pottersville. But there he has to hold for another 3 days. Four is better. By then we'll be fighting here, and we can't have them flanking us. If he can keep them stationary for that long, he can start sliding northward along the line, using the road to the town of Brionton. Once there, he can turn tail and run to Darkmoor, but not before." The Pathfinder nodded. With a tired smile, he said, "I assume you won't mind if these suggestions originate with General Greylock?" Eric smiled and nodded. "Of course, I wouldn't presume to order the Earl to do anything." Then he lost his smile. "But we don't have time for you to run to Darkmoor. I'll go and tell you exactly the same thing I just did, then run back down to the Earl. So if the Earl asks, tell him those are the General's orders, and I'll deal with any problems that might arise from that deception down the road." The Pathfinder nodded. "You know, Captain, when we all get to Darkmoor, we're going to have a very mixed command. A lot of the nobles aren't going to enjoy being told what to do." Eric smiled. "Well, that's why Prince Patrick plans on being there." "The Prince is in Darkmoor." "That's the word. Now get something to eat, then get back down to the Earl of Landreth." The Pathfinder saluted and rode off. Eric looked at the trees being dragged over to fortify the barrier across the King's Highway. Two large ridges overlooked the position, and while Eric watched, crews of mule skinners were hauling catapults up goat trails to emplacements that had been hand-carved out of the rocks. Any congestion along the highway on the enemy's part would result in high casualties. Eric nodded in approval. He was going to get more draft animals out in the next hour to drag away the stumps, and would turn the men to that task as soon as the last tree was felled. The enemy weren't going to have any cover as they approached Ravensburg if Eric von Darkmoor had any say in the matter. Twice skirmishers had neared the defences outside Ravensburg, and at the last minute darted away, returning to the west. Eric waited on the second crest of the highway, high enough to command a panorama of the centre of the battlefield, and close enough to send messages quickly to the front. Word had reached them an hour before that heavy fighting was underway at both the south and north ends of his 10-mile defence. Those were the two most difficult trouble spots, for everything depended upon them holding, forcing the enemy to slide along conveniently provided routes down into the centre, where Eric could let them spend lives trying to punch through. When he finally gave the order to withdraw, those northern and southern units were to cut off any engagements, if possible, and hurry to Darkmoor. Eric would try to give them one additional full day, then it would become a full retreat, without any pretense of a delaying action. Owen and Eric had considered Kalis's original plan and modified it. Kalis had wanted another delaying action, while Eric had argued and convinced Owen that the enemy were so conditioned to have the centre delay that they would be cautious when the defenders abandoned Ravensburg, giving Eric the time he needed to get as many men away as possible. Eric was positive that each man not lost in a delaying action was going to be twice as valuable to the kingdom in the defence of Darkmoor. Now they waited. Swords, spears, and arrows were sharpened, traps were readied, horses were rested. Men sat quietly, some inspecting their armour and weapons again and again, against the possibility of having missed some flaw that might prove fatal. Others waited motionlessly. A few slept, and others said prayers to Tith O'Nanka to keep them courageous, while still others made peace with the Death Goddess, against the time of their meeting her. Eric watched, reviewing every preparation over and over, looking for mistakes, miscalculations, and potential problems. Signalmen stood beside him, flags ready, to relay commands to those units on the ridges to the north and south. The chosen field of battle was a small, flat expanse of ground, nestled between a narrowing in the hills, a funnel along the King's Highway, and the first line of defence was a low-running ridge with a notch through which the road passed. That was the point where Eric had erected the first barricade. A log rampart had been thrown across the road, giving Eric an almost level battlement from the ridgelines on the right and left. The enemy might attempt to scale the rocks on either side, but Eric counted on the placement of his bowmen to repulse them. The battlement had been created to look haphazard and quickly erected, but it wasn't. Eric was counting on the enemy's underestimating the defender's ability to hold against an all-out rush. The day passed slowly. Then the sound of riders came from the other side of the clearing. A dozen horsemen emerged at the highest point of the King's Highway, the last rise on the west, before reaching the cleared battleground. They reined in and sat silently, observing the defenders. One man, the leader, spoke, and two of the riders turned back the way they had come and rode off. Then the leader signalled toward the defenders' barricade, and two of his men cantered their horses forward. Eric said, "Pass the word. If they come within 20 yards of the barricade, they die. If they stay beyond that distance, they can ride their horses into the ground for all I care." A long, narrow trench had been dug before the barricade and carefully concealed. Eric did not want it inspected by the enemy's scouts, but he had no objection to their returning and telling their leaders the way was clear. The runner saluted and raced off toward the barricade, reaching it and passing the orders. At the farthest reach of the defender's bowfire, both riders swerved off the road, turning in a quick loop, waiting for the defenders to fire on them. When not one arrow sped in their direction, they came to a stop on the road. Both men turned and looked at their leader. The man signalled, and one signalled in return. The two riders left the highway, moving to the verge of the road, one on each side. They walked their horses along, slowly. "The lads are looking for traps," came the familiar voice of Sergeant Harper. "Clever of 'em." Eric hadn't noticed Harper's appearance, so focused was he on the two riders. "Everything ready?" Harper said, "as it has been for hours. What are we going to do about those two?" "Nothing.
Let them think we're saving our arrows for the first assault. What if they get too close to the trench? Then they're dead. I've already passed the word. Harper nodded his approval. It'll be good to hold here a bit and bloody the bastards. All this running backward tires a body. There's going to be nothing good about any of what's about to happen, Sergeant. That's what I meant, Captain. I'm just putting it in a different way. Eric shook his head and smiled. Well, if you're so ready to be cutting heads, maybe I should move you to the front. Well, let's not be doing anything so rash, Harper said quickly. I expect there'll be enough fighting to go around this day. I expect, agreed Eric. The advance riders moved along the road, and finally, when they were only a few yards shy of the point where Eric had ordered them killed, they turned and rode quickly back to their leader. The riders then sat motionless, waiting for the column of men who were coming down that road. After most of the day had passed, the sound of marching feet began to reverberate from the west. At first faint, the sound began to increase, until at last Harper said, "Sounds like they're bringing the whole lot this time, Captain." "That it does," said Eric. At the other end of the road, where the riders waited, the woods were thick on both sides of the King's Highway. The sound of the approaching army grew louder, but no soldiers could be seen. Then, suddenly, men emerged from the woods, an unbroken line of men with shields, wielding battle axes, swords, spears, and bows. They marched to a point half the distance between the line of trees and the defenders, then halted.
"What have we here?" asked Harper softly.
"Looks like they've learned a few things since they've landed," said Eric. "If they send the infantry first, we're going to lose some advantages."
Since the time when Kalis's company had served with the Emerald Queen's forces, the usual tactic had been for them to simply unleash their cavalry at any defensive position when able. Infantry was saved for sieges and for flooding gaps in the defenders' lines. Eric cursed.
"I thought we could steal a day, having their cavalry getting themselves butchered."
Harper said,
"Don't give up hope yet, Captain. They may do something rash still."
A column of riders crested the distant hill, moving down the road to halt slightly beyond the infantry. Then they waited. Officers rode into view, moving each to a location along the line, stationed before their men. Still they held position.
"If the riders come down the road, while the infantry cross the clearing, it could get interesting," observed Harper.
Eric said nothing. More riders appeared at the crest. Then a trumpet sounded, three short blasts. With a roar, the assembled footmen started running across the clearing.
"Signal the catapults," Eric said.
He raised his hand, a motion duplicated by the signalman holding a red flag. Eric watched as the attackers raced toward his defences. He had studied this terrain so well he could gauge the distances without markers. When the leading edge of the attackers reached the outer range of the catapults, he paused, then dropped his hand. The flag went down an instant later, and then the well-disguised war engines atop the second ridge let fly. A shower of stones, ranging from one the size of a man's fist to some the size of a large melon, rained down on the attackers. Men screamed and fell, dead or wounded, with broken bones. Those behind could not halt, and some of the wounded were trampled to death by their own comrades. As if the rocks had been a signal, the cavalry charged down the King's Highway.
"They mean to be here before the catapults reload," observed Harper. "Black signal!" shouted Eric, holding up his hand again.
A second flag went up, and when the charging horsemen reached the appropriate range, Eric's hand came down. The black flag dropped, and another round of missiles rained down. Horses screamed and men were thrown as the second company of catapults unleashed its rain of death upon the invaders.
"Green flag!"
shouted Eric, and the third flag went up. When it came down, two special catapults, called mangonels, large counterbalanced beams of wood with huge baskets on the long end, flung a rain of caltrops, metal stars with six sharpened points. Those that didn't strike an attacker landed on the ground, with one point always up. Men and horses both stepped on the terrible spikes, which lamed the horses and felled men. By the time the attackers worked through the mass of wounded in the front ranks, the first company of war engines had been reloaded and were launching their missiles. And by the time the third green flag had been raised and fell, the entire attacking front was broken and in retreat. Hundreds of men and horses lay in the late afternoon sun, and not one Kingdom soldier had been wounded. Eric turned to a grinning Harper and said,
"Get the perimeter companies out and start looking for their infiltrators. They'll want those catapults out of action by tomorrow, so expect a lot of unwelcome visitors in the hills tonight."
Harper said,
"Sir,"
and turned to carry out his orders. Eric watched the withdrawal and thought they had gotten off as lightly as possible for the first day. He also knew that, starting tomorrow, things would get considerably more difficult. Dying men groaned in pain, begged for water, or cried. Some called to their gods, or their mothers, or wives, while others could not speak. Eric watched the carnage as the sun sank behind the western hills. He had been correct in his prediction that the invaders would avoid another confrontation before attempting to neutralize the defenders' catapults. Bands of infiltrators probed through the night, being met at every possible point by alert defensive resistance, with Jaddo's men acting as a flying company to reinforce any breach on the north, and another company under a corporal named Wallace did the same on the south. At dawn, it was clear the attackers had tired of trying to find a weak spot, and had decided to simply throw men at the defenders. Eric watched as four times during the day thousands of invaders ran across the battlefield, the funnel, as Eric thought of it, to die under the devastating fire of the defenders. Harper said,
"Sir, will they ask for truce to give comfort to their wounded?"
Eric said, "No, it's not their way. Their wounded only slow 'em down."
"It's a bitter thing, then."
"So we'll have no truce to retrieve our lads on some future occasion?"
"No,"
said Eric. "My advice, if you're wounded, is to act dead and hope they don't spare any time to ensure you are. Then crawl off somewhere after they've passed."
"I'll remember that, sir."
Eric watched as three companies of defenders had actually reached the barricades on the last assault, and while none of his men died, several had taken wounds as they killed those who had tried to climb over the barricade. The attackers had found all of Eric's traps the hard way. Pits with stakes and the cleverly disguised trench just below the defensive breastwork had claimed scores of attackers. But now the route was clearly marked. Eric judged the light and thought they might try one more attack before sundown. He prayed they didn't. He had planned to fall back under cover of darkness to the secondary defensive position, a well-placed second barricade that would put the attackers in the clear line of Eric's bowmen as they climbed over the first barricade and turned the 50 yards of open space between the two lines into a killing ground. If he could hold here another night, then keep them away for one more day after that, he felt sure those fleeing toward Darkmoor would be safely away. Patrols were riding along the eastern slopes of the hills, ensuring no small companies of invaders had somehow slipped through to trouble the defenders from behind. Eric knew that, yet he feared some unnamed surprise would come to put an end to all his clever planning. trumpets sounded, and Eric said, "Damn, I was hoping they'd give it a rest."
"Not likely, sir," said Harper, pulling his sword, a large hand-and-a-half affair, which he preferred to the broad sword and shield used by most of the men.
From out of the trees across the field, men ran, shouting and exhorting their fellows to get close to the defence and breach it. Eric started giving signals, and the catapults and mangonels dispensed death to the attackers, and then the archers let their bows sing. But this time the attack rolled forward. When the first few men struck the barricade and died trying to climb, Eric could see more men emerging from the woods, entering the funnel, and he knew that whoever commanded on the opposite side was throwing everything at him. Eric pulled his own sword and said,
"Sergeant, order the support companies to the ready. I want them right behind our men on the barricade."
"Sir," said Harper, and started shouting orders. Three squads each, the support companies numbered 180 men, under the direction of a sergeant whose job was to recognize a breach and fill it as quickly as possible. The value of the zone between the two defensive barricades would be lost if defenders were mixed in with the attackers. The archers on the rocks above and on the second barricade would not be able to safely fire into the killing ground. Eric saw a plumed helmet, a captain in the Emerald Queen's army, who was trying to force himself past a determined attacker who was keeping the defender before him busy. Eric was about to order the archers to pick off the officer, but someone on the ridge above had seen him and sent an arrow flying before Eric could speak. The battle raged along the barricade, and Eric felt frustrated, standing on the second ridge, sword in hand, knowing that if he fought, the advantage was lost. Remembering he was now an officer in command of the area, he put away his sword and watched. As the sun sank out of sight, the fight at the barricade remained in balance, attackers swarming across the funnel to replace men who had fallen. Messages arrived from both flanks, indicating the fighting was uniformly fierce at both ends of the line, but that all sections were holding. When the western sky began to darken, Eric waited for the recall trumpet to sound, but it didn't come. As darkness approached, torches appeared in the west, and soldiers ran toward them, carrying illumination to continue the fight into the darkness.
"Damn," said Harper. "They're not about to go away, are they?"
"Apparently not," said Eric. He calculated he had to make a choice now, either beginning the withdrawal, losing the ability to cover the retreat across the killing ground, but getting most of his men to the second barricade, which was almost certain to hold through the night, or continuing to fight and trying to hold them until they withdrew. If they were victorious, it would be a major victory, one that would hold the enemy here in Ravensburg for at least a week more. But if they collapsed, and the invaders overran the second barrier before the kingdom troops could fall back, the results could be disastrous for the kingdom. Eric hesitated. For the first time since he had returned to Ravensburg, he cursed Kalis for being absent. He or Greylock should have to make this decision, not a young soldier who had only read about these sorts of problems in books. Harper had his sword ready.
"What are we to do, sir?"
Eric's mind raced. He needed an inspiration and a way to get his men back to the second barricade by sunrise without letting the enemy follow. Harper said,
"Maybe a few of those lads will trip over something and set fire to themselves."
Eric's eyes widened.
"Harper, you're a genius." "I know, sir, but that still doesn't tell us what we're to do."
"Charge," said Eric. "Bring up every man we have to the barricades and hold 'em till sunrise."
"Very well, sir."
Harper turned and began shouting orders, and men held in reserve were suddenly tumbling over the second barricade and hurrying to reinforce the first. Eric said,
"Now things get easy."
"If you say so, sir," said Harper. "Do we stand here or join the fight?"
Eric pulled his sword. "We fight." The two men ran forward.